Monster Man, Episode 134, Tabaxi and Tentamort. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In this episode, we're going to be looking at two monsters from the T chapter of the Fiend Folio, the 1981 supplement for Devane's Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. Before we do that, though, it's time for a little administration. First, Happy New Year! Second, you'll be excited to hear that I have decided what we're going to do after the end of this season of Monster Man, that is, after we're done with the Fiend Folio. I've always said that after the Fiend Folio, I was going to move on to the Monster Manual 2, but before I start on a whole new book, I'd like to take a little break. So instead, what I'm going to do is we're going to finish out the Fiend Folio, and then we're going to take a look at the Fiend Factory, the Column and White Dwarf from which many of the Fiend Folio monsters originated. And we're going to start by looking at the early issues, well, not early, but kind of the early to middle period of the Fiend Factory, the ones that are contemporary with the Fiend Folio monsters, and looking at the monsters that didn't make the cut. Then, once we're done with those, we're going to move on to Monster Manual 2. Mind you, we've still got a good month or two at least left in the Fiend Folio, so this isn't going to happen too soon, but I just thought I'd mention it. Speaking of administration, I'd also like to thank a new patron. Well, not a new patron, but Daniel Lofton has increased the level of his pledge, and I'm grateful for that. So thank you very much for your support of the show, Daniel. Daniel's got a special request episode of Monster Man coming up, which I predict you're going to enjoy. Finally, we're about to begin a new season of my patron-only podcast, Patron Deities, and this one's going to talk about the Cthulhu Mythos section of the Deities and Demigods book. And this is going to be really fun for me because I'm a big Lovecraft fan. I've written stuff about him. I've given conference papers about Lovecraft and archaeology specifically. So this is one of those rare occasions where I get to use this other enthusiasm of mine in a D&D context, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So there should be an episode of Patron Deities coming into the general Monster Man podcast feed in January, and that's going to be the first episode of that series, so be on the lookout for that. Okay, with that taken care of, let's talk monsters. Our first creature for this episode is the Tabaxi or Tabashi. Later materials helpfully clarify that there are actually both Tabaxi and Tabashi, which I presume is a gag about how nobody could agree on how to pronounce the name. But there are leopard people who are Tabaxi, and there are jaguar people who are Tabashi. I've given the game away there. These are basically cat people, and they were created by Lawrence Schick, who also created the Arakocra, another species of animal people found in the Fiend Folio. The Tabaxi have maintained or perhaps reintroduced a presence in Dungeons & Dragons, and I think that they are now pretty common as a player character race. They're in 5th edition, they're in Volo's Guide as a player character race, and I think people like them because people like cat people. Ron Edwards, in some ways a controversial writer about role-playing games, but apart from his writings on RPG theory, he is perhaps best known for coining the term fantasy heartbreaker. A fantasy heartbreaker is something that there aren't that many of nowadays, which is to say a role-playing game created with the completely unrealistic goal that it would be a D&D killer. That is to say, a game that is essentially just someone's D&D house rules. Now, fantasy heartbreakers are very interesting in some ways, quite apart from their kind of tragic business aspect, but these were the days before crowdfunding and digital publishing, and many people who we, you know, make fun of for publishing fantasy heartbreakers actually found themselves having wasted a good deal of money. Anyway, the point is that fantasy heartbreakers are a clue to what people thought was missing from Dungeons & Dragons. So you can see that they often have some kind of spell point system, because spell memorization, A, doesn't make sense, and B, is kind of confusing. They often have hit locations or a different form of armor, and they very frequently have playable lizard people and playable cat people. So one of the things that people definitely wanted to do in a fantasy game was play cat people. And why shouldn't they? People love cats. The Tabaxi are one of those monsters that works. I mean, there's a whole description of them, but basically I've summed it up when I said cat people. In terms of their behavior and in terms of what they do, it's very much just kind of like, oh yeah, they're like cat. And this works really well because, of course, we know what cats are like. And the Tabaxi give you that opportunity to make the familiar seem dangerous again, because, of course, if your cat was the size of a person, that would be quite scary. I mean, that would be a lion or a tiger. And you'd think twice about all the sort of humiliating treatment that you dish out to that animal. Now, I don't technically have a cat, it's really my neighbor's cat, but it comes and spends a lot of time in my house, and I think I can run a whole series of Tabaxi encounters just based on the various weird things that this animal does. And that's what makes the Tabaxi so great, right? I've talked before about how animal-based monsters come with our instinctive understanding of what that animal is. And I talked at length about this in the Devil Dogs episode about, you know, the visceral attachment that humans feel to dogs. And perhaps our connection to cats is second only to that. I love both cats and dogs. I'm not stating a preference. I'm just saying that the image of the dog is maybe a tad bit more powerful in our culture than the image of the cat, but only just. So the Tabaxi are a great monster because, I mean, they're kind of a low-hanging fruit, right? They're a concept that is sort of universal. You know, cat people turn up in various other sources, and here they're just kind of taking that idea and implementing it cleanly in Dungeons & Dragons. What's really interesting to me about the Tabaxi and their origins is that Lawrence Schick has said that they were his attempt to put the Xinti into Dungeons & Dragons. The Xinti are a race of aliens from the fiction of Larry Niven, and indeed the Man-Xin Wars became one of those kind of shared universe things where lots of other writers also wrote short stories set in the universe that the Xinti are in, the known space setting. They even turned up in Star Trek the Animated Series. And the Xinti have this, I mean, they're basically what Klingons kind of would ultimately evolve into, this honor-bound warrior culture with a kind of Bushido sort of a system and very hierarchical and unfair social structure and a bunch of stuff. I mean, to be honest, I haven't really read that much Larry Niven. I've read some of the Ringworld books. But there's nothing about the Xinti that is similar to Tabaxi. Nothing. You know, they're big warrior man-tiger guys. Are the Kilrathi and Wing Commander based on the Xinti? I mean, it doesn't matter. The point is that the only point of similarity between the Tabaxi and the Xinti is that they're cat people. And apparently, that's enough. All right, next up we got the Tentamort by Mike Roberts. Now the Tentamort, obviously coming from root words that mean tentacle and death, is a big death tentacle monster. Actually, I think it's quite clever. So the Tentamort basically has a kind of blobby circular body. It has a bunch of little tentacles that it uses to clamber all over walls. And then it's got two big tentacles. And these two tentacles are different. One of them is a sort of grabber tentacle that, you know, wraps its muscular length around a character and restrains them. And then the other one has this needly bone bit in it. And it stabs you with this and injects you with a paralytic secretion. And then, once it's paralyzed you, it then injects you with a sort of digestive enzyme that'll slowly kill you. Now, what's great about the Tentamort as a monster is that it has escalating peril. Most monsters in Dungeons & Dragons, over time, don't really change how frightening they are. If you're fighting a dragon, the most dangerous that dragon is going to be is in turn one. It's going to breathe fire at you. And if it doesn't kill you breathing fire at you, it's going to breathe fire at you again, only it's going to have fewer hit points, hopefully. There are a few monsters that have that kind of multiple round danger. Anything that paralyzes, ghouls would be one example, or anything that strategy in an aquatic environment is to drown you. And those are all really good because what they are is monsters who, by their nature, change the stakes and structure of the fight. Yeah, they don't just stand up and go toe-to-toe because you're going to wind up, instead of just trading blows with this thing, trying to rescue somebody from it. And that's a lot more fun, particularly because you get multiple bites at the apple. Right? If you don't manage to prevent the person from getting grabbed by the Tentamort, you can try and prevent them from getting paralyzed. And if you can't prevent them from getting paralyzed, then you can try to prevent them from getting injected with the digestive enzyme. And if you can't do that, then even then, if you kill them, the Tentamort, and free the person from it, then there are ways to cure them, although they're pretty extreme. So what this means is that the shape of a Tentamort fight is always changing, and that's a really valuable thing. And it's not a particularly complex or challenging monster other than that. It's just a basically good idea. One of my pet peeves about fight scenes is that a lot of people think that combat in RPGs is dull, and one of the reasons that combat in RPGs is dull is dull fight scenes. But no one seems to think that social interaction in RPGs is dull, even though if you're interacting with dull characters, social interaction in RPGs is very dull. So I don't know why combat on the whole gets to carry the bag for badly designed combat, but one thing that makes interesting combats more easy to design is monsters like this, where with a relatively small number of moving parts, they produce interesting complications in a fight scene. So I like the Tentamort. I mean, I'm not wild about the name, but it's a good alien monstrosity. You could see it on the cover of a sci-fi comic book from the 1950s. And yeah, I think it's actually just a pretty solid piece of design. So three cheers for the Tentamort. I'm a fan. That's about all the time that we have for today. In our next episode, we're going to be talking about the Tarithrin and the Thaqua on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.